you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Rob Sutton, the SDR show. This week, really cool, legendary guitarist, part of a legendary writing duo. It's Steve Stevens. You probably know him from Billy Idol's band, but he's done so many other things. It is overwhelming. Super cool dude. We have Don Jameson of That Jameson Show coming in the role of co-host. Remember, we do the show every Wednesday, every Saturday. Then it comes out 5 days later with commercials. I just want you to listen. I don't care where you listen. But if you are a big Steve Stevens fan and you could have heard this 5 days earlier without commercials, maybe you head on over to GasDigitalNetwork.com, use the code SDR, get 20% off, get a 7-day free trial, get access to HD, commercial-free, every episode we've ever done, 21 other shows. We just launched Zach Wild. His new podcast is called Wild Goose, and 20 other shows on the network. It's worth doing, but really, just support, listen, share. That's all we care about. And here it is right now, the Steve Stevens episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the host. It's beat, our beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again as the co-host, host of That Jameson Show and formerly That Metal Show. So much so of a legendary show that our host doesn't even remember being on it. But Don Jameson, thank you so much for coming on a second time and to be my co-host.
This is great, man. I always appreciate you having me on when you got the hard rockers, man. It's so cool.
Yeah, I realized, by the way, that Big J is my usual co-host. And I have a few others that step in, James Mattern and whatnot. But when it's a rock guy, I don't have to do as much heavy lifting as I normally do. Because you're going to know as much, if not more than I do, when the rock stars come on. So thank you, Don Jameson.
You got it, man.
So now this dude, I'm going to say, first of all, Grammy award winning, right? Let's do that. Let's say part of one of the most legendary rock duos to ever grace the rock and roll stages in the past 40 years, I think is what it is. My math is right. The one and only Steve Stevens. How are you, sir?
All right. Great. Thanks for having me. Good to see you guys.
Thank you for showing up at some sort of underground electronic bunker, it looks like.
It's the Bat Cave, yeah.
No, fair enough. So I did, a bunch of research on you because I'm fascinated to learn different things that I do what I do.
We know things,
yeah.
Now I'm scared, okay.
So we'll start with this. You grew up in Far Rockaway, right?
Correct. Yes, sir.
And that area is an interesting area because I don't know when's the last time you were back. When's the last time you were back in Far Rockaway?
I took my wife to see what's left of Far Rockaway about 3.5 years ago.
Okay, because when I was a kid, it was a shit show over there. Mm-hmm. There was a while that it was beautiful. I think you're about 10 years older than me, but there was a time when it was a beautiful place to go spend time on the beach with your kids and go enjoy life. And it went down the hill, but over the past 3 or 4 years, mm-hmm. it's starting to come back again. So there's new hotels over there. There's a new vibe over there. So now there's new life found back in your old neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they were planning on revitalizing a lot of the beachfront area, but Hurricane Sandy kind of decimated that. So we were there after there were still signs for FEMA and stuff because we went back and visited after that. But I was surprised to find out that actually Patti Smith has a bungalow there. Mm-hmm. And her bungalow is 2 blocks from the street, well, the area where every summer I'd be there with, acoustic guitars, everybody. It was as you said, I'm probably 10 years older than you. And when I was starting to play guitar was when the whole folk rock thing was happening. James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, and every weekend you'd had like 15 to 20 kids down there with guitars, acoustic guitars, you know, playing all night. And that was, that's when it was really a great place to grow up.
Well, I'm going to give these guys a free plug. They're not paying for anything, but there's a new hotel down there. The only nice hotel out there. It's called the Rockaway Hotel. They have like a beautiful restaurant, a pool. It's right on the beach. And you and your wife should go check it out sometime and relive some old days. It's beautiful over there, right?
Yeah, it's crazy because I tell people, yeah, I grew up in New York and all my friends surfed. Surfed? I was like, yeah, everybody surfed.
That's really funny.
Hey, Steve, are you the most famous person from Far Rockaway?
I don't know. There's a couple of, I don't know. I've looked on the Wikipedia for there, and there are a couple other renowned people from Far Rockaway. But there was a protest singer named Phil Oakes, and he was from Far Rockaway. And actually, his sister, now we're going way back, but his sister was my first guitar teacher.
Oh, wow. So that leads me to this question, which I like, is that so you started playing guitar when you were like seven and a half years old, and you were playing an out-of-tune guitar. You didn't know what you were doing, and one of your siblings' friends said, at least let me tune this for you, and that's how your guitar career started.
Yeah, I mean, I think my parents pleaded with them. They knew my brother's friend played guitar. I said, please put that damn thing in tune at least.
And that's where you got your love, because your guitar playing more than anything is rooted in acoustic. Your love of flamenco guitar, all that shit, folk guitar, it all starts with that, I guess, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, it was a good, you know, first thing I saw, obviously, was like the Beatles and the Stones on Ed Sullivan. But soon after that, I got my first acoustic guitar. And as I mentioned, you know, folk music was really happening. And, we had great guitar teachers. And then there was guys like blues players, Reverend Gary Davis, who used to give guitar lessons. He lived in Queens. And so, I didn't get an electric guitar until I was 13. So all that time was spent playing acoustic. And, but even the rock stuff that was coming out at that time, stuff like, you know, The Who and stuff, you could play on acoustic guitar.
Right. There's that old adage that if it doesn't transfer to acoustic, it's probably not that great of a song.
Yeah. I mean, every decent song that I've ever written or collaborated with somebody on is usually started on an acoustic guitar.
And when you were a kid, your dad, which is so weird because, Don, I guess you could speak to this. When you said, I want to be a comedian, I can't imagine your family driving you around to go to comedy clubs because they're so proud of you, because that's not really like a thing that's done. But little Stevie Stevens, his dad's driving him to auditions. That's crazy.
Wow. Yeah, my dad. I'm so fortunate, man, that my parents was really supportive. And, you know, my dad, I didn't have to rebel against my dad's record collection because he was buying rock stuff. You know, he had no interest in all the kind of, you know, the Benny Goodmans and all this. He wanted to know what was currently happening. And it was really, really, you know, he had musical education. You know, he turned me on to stuff and, hey, have you heard this? And so
it's just a funny idea that if like your dad's listening to heavier music than you are.
Sorry, Steve. I was just going to say, usually you don't want your parents to like the music that you do. But it turned out obviously great for you because he turned you on to the type of music you've been playing now for the last 40 years.
Yeah, my dad was pretty hip. You know, he loved to tinker with electronics and stuff. And I think, and he had a great little workshop down in the basement. And I think that translated to my wanting to explore the sound of the guitar rather than just being proficient on the instrument. So he'd bring home, you know, records like Switched on Bach, you know, the first Moog records, and say, hey, this is where technology is going. And then, you know, I turn them on to something and, dad, you know. So it's really cool, really cool.
That's really wild.
And here you are now still tinkering in the basement.
I still have Yeah.
Well, that leads me to this craziest thing, which is that, you know, there's that famous ray gun sound in Rebel Yell, and that comes from you tinkering with a fucking actual ray gun, and you figured it out that the sound would come through the pickups.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was no mystery to us that that, you know, when we were working on Rebel Yell, we had a winner, and we were at Electric Lady Studios, which was, you know, the house that Jimi Hendrix built, and I had an incredible engineer, Dave Whitman, who had recorded, you know, the Kiss records and Led Zeppelin, Houses of the Holy, and so I had all this stuff at my disposal. And when it came to Rebel Yell, I knew that the guitar solo had to be more than just, you know, a bunch of notes. And I was looking for some sort of effect and some sort of way to, like, end the solo with a whiz-bang kind of thing. And I used to collect these you know, they made in China, ray guns and toys and little robots and stuff. And as luck would have it, I was, you know, watching TV one night with my little guitar and practice amp, and I'm playing this ray gun, and I hear it through the amp. It's like one of those light bulbs go, you know, might have something.
How would you replicate that on tour? Would you bring a ray gun? Like, how would you actually?
Yeah, now it's become like a tradition where Billy presents me with the ray gun. It's like, you know, I practiced, you know, 50 years my whole life to become technically proficient. My career comes down to pulling the trigger on a toy ray gun.
Did you ever think about putting out your own line of toy ray guns?
The ones that actually work, because I have to open them up and doctor them and add a speed control to them, and the only ones that work that way were from the 70s, so I have a bunch of them. So I do offer them on my website. They're personally modified by me, and I solder them and do all this stuff. So if anybody wants an official ray gun.
Wow, that's really wild. That's so fucking cool. And it's such a quintessential album. I love thinking about going back to, you know, 83, you guys are recording Rebel Yell. The first, which I'm sure people have heard the story, but it is fascinating that the idea for Rebel Yell came from Billy going to a party with the Stones.
Yeah, I mean, that's the story that I know of. We befriended Ronnie Wood at that time, and I guess Billy went to a birthday party. I'm not sure which of the Stones were whose birthday it was, but I guess evidently they were drinking this bourbon, which is called Rebel Yell, and Billy kind of went, "Oh, you guys aren't thinking of using that title, are you?" So the next day we're in the studio, and you know, he goes, I got the name of the album title. You know, I got the album title. I got a name for the song, because we had been working on it. You know, we kept every day was like half recording and half writing, and so we had amassed a bunch. You know, at least 9 or 10 songs, and we didn't have all the lyrics or titles. And once he had that title and some of the lyrics, we were off and running.
That's so fucking cool,
Steve. You said that you knew specifically that the solo in Rebel Yell had to be special. What was it about the song, and did you think, like, all these years later, it would still be seriously one of the most iconic, you know, lead breaks in rock music?
You know, Don, when you got a winner, it's like you when you've got a good, you know, a bit or something, you know it. You just go, man, I can't wait for people to hear this. You know, we had done the first Billy Idol record, and the last track recorded was White Wedding. So we knew, you know, that raised the bar. Okay, that's the... We have to start at that level. So when we went in to do Rebel Yell, we made sure, A, we had great tunes, great riffs, great studio. You know, we would have had to been real knuckleheads to fuck that up. Yeah. All the stars aligned for us.
So you, if I'm not mistaken, you fired your drummer midway and replaced him with Tommy from Scandal, right?
We never fire anyone.
Or he was no longer part of it, however you want to put it.
Right, yeah. Because he's still my friend.
Right, so you let him, whatever, but I've heard you say that the drumming just wasn't, it didn't feel right, so he needed to be replaced, and you just heard Scandal playing next door, like, that drummer sounds cool. How do you, A, approach that guy, but B, tell your guy, this ain't working out?
Yeah, you know, we've always, the majority of the stuff is always, you know, with my career with Billy, was always done, especially back then, was Billy, myself, and our producer, Keith Forsey. Now, Keith was originally a drummer. He used to play, he worked with Giorgio Moroder, and he's actually the drummer on all those Donna Summers records. His timing and approach is exact. He's actually the drummer on White Wedding, and we'd always be, like, begging him to go in the room, get behind the kit and play the drums. But he was like, I'm not a drummer anymore. I'm a record producer. And so we just, you know, it just, you know, we knew what we were looking for. We were looking for a heavy rock sound, but with a disco exactness and a sensibility, a sonic thing that in our head we knew. You know, if you can imagine it, then it's just a matter of finding the right people. And, you know, as luck would have it, you know, Scandal was down the hall. We heard the drum tracks being recorded. And Tommy Price is, you know, he's a motherfucker of a drummer. And we said, what about that guy? Wouldn't it be amazing if he's just down the hall? And we approached him, and he came in, and I think Rebel Yell was the first thing we put up the multi-track, and he played against him. We went, we got our guy. So,
and then he became part of the band, which is just so cool. It's just a wild, lucky that you were all there that day. Who the fuck knows what would have happened?
Yeah, we, you know, like I said, man, the stars aligned. The right people showed up at the right time.
And with, go ahead. I'm sorry, Don. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because he mentioned White Wedding. And, you know, so it's funny. Like, we all, obviously, everybody in the world knows the song. But I think it's credited as White Wedding Part 1. Was there ever, I don't think there was ever a Part 2. What happened there?
You know, this was like the days Billy was kind of, and Keith were at the forefront of doing dance remixes for rock bands. I think it was at that time, maybe us and Def Leppard were the only rock-oriented bands doing extended mixes to be played in discos. So we'd always leave, you know, we would cut the track and make sure there was enough material for remixers to use. So White Wedding Part 1, we always imagined there'd be a dance remix that would be Part 2. There was a remix done of it. And we'd send out the multi-tracks to different people that were, you know, there was only a handful of guys who would do remixes then. So we always considered the dance remix to be Part 2.
That's wild. You know, what's funny is that I remember, I often say this, that 99 was the best year for movies. 91 was the biggest year for rock and roll, metal. But 83 was the best year for, like, all over the place great pop music. Like, whether it was Rebel Yell, it was Madonna and Michael Jackson and Prince. It was just like a golden moment. And also New Wave and all this other. Everything was acceptable on mainstream radio because it hadn't segmented out yet to where you have to be at this station or this band or whatever.
Right.
So the idea that a rock band would create songs to have dance mixes at that time is not unheard of. But nowadays you'd be like, what the fuck is wrong with you that you would do something like that?
Yeah. And, you know, man, you know, at that time in New York, you know, you mentioned Madonna and everyone was in New York creating music, even like the guys from Duran Duran and John Waite and, you know, Cyndi Lauper. Man, and these were all friends of mine. These were all my struggling musicians were getting gigs and getting regular, you know, friend musicians were getting gigs and getting recognized. And my friend Eddie Martinez, guitar player, he's on the Robert Palmer stuff. And we were all exchanging, you know, we couldn't wait to get on the phone and, hey, man, come down to the studio and hear what we're doing. And as you said, it wasn't departmentalized, you know. We were all kind of like just creating our own unique styles.
Did you know? Go ahead, Jim. Don, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Ross. the very smart thing that I just picked up on with Steve as far as doing the dance remixes was so great because if you got the girls to dance to your music and come to your shows, the guys always followed. So even though
way,
you were in the hard rock world, you got the girls coming and then the guys always followed. There's you double your audience instantly.
Absolutely. And that's been that way since the days of Frank Sinatra. And, you know, we're lucky because Idol's a good looking guy. So, you know, it was we had that covered, you know.
And he's one of the few guys that figured out how to still be a fucking cool dude in his 60s. Yeah. I don't know how the fuck he's pulling that off. He looks cooler than me.
All right, before we go any further, let's talk about one of our newest sponsors. It's Zippix Toothpicks. If you're trying to quit smoking, this is a really logical way to do it. Maybe you're trying to quit vaping, smoking, anything where especially you can't blow smoke in a, like I see Shannon always like secretly smoking sometimes in restaurants. People do that all the time. I saw it on my flight back from Miami. Someone tried to sneak it on a plane. They got in trouble. It happens all the time. Zippix Toothpicks has figured out a way to take care of that. Why? It has sublingual absorption in a toothpick, comes in six great flavors, and it gives you that nicotine buzz. And because it's through saliva, it actually happens quicker than when you breathe it in and breathe it out. It's cheaper than cigarettes. You don't have to smell the smoke. You don't have to see the smoke. You don't have to worry about hiding cigarette butts. And it, as I said, it costs less than cigarettes. So if you go to Zippix Toothpicks, I'll spell it for you, Zippix Toothpicks, plural.com, and it'll be your healthier alternative to smoking, and no more trying to blow it out the side window, or that new song that says, what's that new Bruno Mars song, Smoking on the Terrace or some stupid thing like that. You won't have to do that either. And I'm really pitching to the right audience, bringing up Bruno Mars on sex, drugs, and rock and roll. ZippixToothpicks.com. Let's get back into it.
So the one other couple of things on this record, then we'll move on. But I love the idea because I know at the time, keyboards were the thing. Like everybody wanted to jam keyboards down your throat. And I think part of even the Rebel Yell intro almost sounds like keyboards, but it's not. You went out of your way to do your best to limit keyboards into the music because you don't want to be categorized that way. Did you have to figure out new ways to play your guitar to pull that off?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if I didn't come up with a way to replicate a keyboard or the role that a keyboard would play in the song, they were going to take up that space. And I wanted to, you know, I didn't want to just play guitar chords and do the standard thing. I remember, you know, seeing on those Queen records, no synthesizers used. You know, Brian May was very adamant that, hey, man, I'm doing this on my guitar. And I kind of thought that was very cool. So I'd at least say to Billy and Keith, give me a shot at doing what the keyboard would do. If I fail, then bring them in, you know. But we may find something more unique than just, you know, dumping a keyboard on it.
As a former strip club DJ, did you realize that you were creating an anthem for eternity with Flesh for Fantasy? You had to know that.
Well, strippers would tell me. Not that I ever went to a strip club, but I heard it through the grapevine that it was being played.
Yeah, I mean, it's like almost like it would be sacrilege if I didn't play it at least once a night in my 10 years as a strip club DJ. It's like you had to play that song. It's crazy.
Yeah, it seemed like Girls, Girls, Girls and Flesh for Fantasy was the sandwich.
Yeah. That's very, very true. So Now... there's this crazy story I heard. It's sometimes you hear things about people, you're not sure if it's true or not, but, you know, one of the most iconic moments I would imagine you feel in your life is playing with Michael Jackson, that iconic video and whatnot. Just one of the greatest moments, I think, of he was great at melding rock and roll with pop and dance and unbelievably. But you went to meet Michael, and he said, you know, Eddie Van Halen played on Beat It, and you're like, yeah. We all fucking know Eddie Van Halen played on Beat It. Like, he would thought he was telling you something you might not be aware of.
Yeah. You know, Michael was incredible, man. And, you know, I had not really done that many sessions outside of Billy Idol. So I got the call. I was signed to Warner Brothers by Ted Templeman, the Van Halen producer. And Ted was friends with Quincy Jones. So Quincy, when they're working on the Bad record, the follow-up to Thriller, said, we have another rock track, you know, who should we get? Ted threw my name in there, Quincy called. I go out to do the session, and I'm thinking there's going to be an entourage, and, you know, man, I'm not used to this kind of thing. And lo and behold, I walk in the studio, and it's just Michael, Quincy Jones, and their engineer, Bruce. And so it was exactly the way I was used to working, and you know, Michael was one of those guys whose attention to his brilliance was his attention to detail. If I, you know, there was a little like part where there was a very important to him, a very important space that had to be, you know, had to not play in that space. And I remember him like catching that right away. Oh, you know, don't play in this spot. And he'd sing me the melodies and things like that, what he was looking for. And in a very musical terms, not in, you know, they didn't put sheet music in. I don't read, so it would have been fruitless. But being in the studio with those guys, that three, incredible. One of the highlights of my career.
Did he really do a David Lee Roth impression for you?
When we did the video, yeah. Yeah, because he was getting ready. So with the do, you know, the recording session only lasts a couple hours, right? But when we did the video, we're on the sound stage the whole day. The monkey is there. The cheer, you know,
the
bubbles.
The monkey is there. That's
the
crazy.
Monkey's there. The whole thing, man. The whole crazy thing.
That's fucking crazy.
So we're on the sound stage in between takes, and you know, Michael's getting ready to plan his tour, and. And he was used to the Jackson tours, which were kind of more R&B oriented. He wanted the big rocks spectacle. And he was asking me, what sound company you use, what lighting company. He goes, have you ever seen Queen? Or, you know, these were the big... How, and then we were talking about Van Halen. He had seen Van Halen. He goes, oh, I love David Lee Roth, you know. And he proceeds, man, this is so surreal, proceeds, imagine, if you will... Michael Jackson impersonating David Lee Roth, strutting and, you know, look at all the people here, the whole thing.
How was his impression? Was it a pretty good impression?
Look, it was spot on.
That's so fucking cool.
Yeah.
I remember back in the day, you know, Steve, back in the day, I worked at behind the scenes at MTV, and I remember Billy dating Downtown Julie Brown at the time. That must have been an interesting period of your career with him.
Yeah.
You guys were the darlings of MTV. With Downtown Julie Brown.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I always looked at, I mean, Billy was obviously really involved in the making of those videos, picking the directors and scheming up these things. And all I wanted when we did Rebel Yell, the first one, my only request was, let's do a live video because we're getting ready to go out on tour. We have to telegraph to an audience, not just in the major cities, but we're going to be hitting, you know, bumfuck Iowa and all these like small places where if we have this video on MTV and Art Orange is dressed up and doing the fist and the going wild, and that's going to telegraph to people exactly how to have fun at a rock show and let yourself go, you know, be part of it, and don't just, you know, do that thing which they tend to do in New York, and you know, like be a part of the show. So really, you know, for me, that Rebel Yell video says it all.
Was in Jersey, right? You did that guy's live. You did it live in Jersey or something. Am I right?
We did it at the Capitol Theater, I believe. Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy. And everyone there were genuine fans. It wasn't like an audience of extras. It was people that went to go see a Billy Idol show.
I think the morning of we had like three radio stations announced that we were filming a video. And if you show up looking rock and roll, you'll be in the video. So that was it.
All right, before we go any further, talking about rockauto.com, the online store with every auto part at the best possible prices. I don't know shit about cars, but what I do know is rockauto.com has been in business for 20 years, and they make it easy for you to find the parts you need at the best possible prices. How do I know they have the best possible prices? They don't even have a discount code. They just want you to go to rockauto.com and then find anything and everything you've been looking for. Maybe you've been arguing with counter guys. Maybe they didn't have the color you wanted. Maybe they wanted you to wait because it's on back order, or you're just paying storefront markups. Who the fuck wants to deal with that shit? Just go to rockauto.com and you'll get great pricing. Whether you're a mechanic, an auto shop, or just some dude working on his car, go to rockauto.com. You all have the same access to the same great pricing. Maybe you just want to peruse and look around without having a fucking salesman say, can I help you with that? Gets fucking annoying. Just go to rockauto.com. Rockauto.com. No promo code needed. Just tell them you heard about them on the SDR show. RockAuto.com. Let's get back into it.
So I touched on this at the top of the show. You guys have been together 40 years. There's a few years in there where you guys were not together. But unlike, and maybe I'm wrong here, so please tell me if I am. I'm often wrong on the show. Unlike most of these duos or bands or whatever, it was never bad blood. Like, he moved to California, you decided to stay in New York. It was always an amicable relationship. Is that right? Because that's very unique.
Yeah. I didn't want to move to Los Angeles. Billy had decided to move. I was signed to Warner Brothers to do a solo record, which I always envisioned as being in addition to doing Billy Idol stuff. But it was taking me longer to do the record. I thought, well, if I'm going to do this and I do it right, you know, I have to dedicate my time and energy to doing this. And But, you know, it was, you know, we left, we kind of went, I'll see you down the road a little bit. I'm going to do this. I really need to express myself this way. And there was never any, you know, after I had left the band, I flew out to be at his baby shower and all. You know, we stayed friends.
That's really wild.
And I think that was, you know, Billy was always, he would always, you know, revert back to the his punk rock ideals, which was that you were still going to be friends, you weren't going to have bad blood, you were going to treat your band well. He still travels with the band, and that's. I say, why do you do? You know, why do? He goes, that's punk rock, mate. You know, that's punk rock. You're with your mates, and that's you know, he loves being a part of the band and getting in there and mixing it up. And there's none of this kind of superstar.
Yeah,
crap
like
with
the Motley Crue where each guy gets their own tour bus kind of shit, right?
Yeah. No, he's really cool that way, and I think that's why our relationship has lasted, you know, coming on 40 years now, because I genuinely like the guy and I respect him.
Yeah, and the other part of it, Steve, man, which, you know, I talk to legacy guys like you all the time, and I love discovering new young rock bands, and there's a lot of them, but, man, it's so hard now to create what I call a household hit, you know, like back in the MTV era, you know, that I was talking about before. Those songs, you know, like my mother, my grandmother knew Rebel Yell or Eyes Without a Face or and songs like that. And now it's tough. I mean, how does a band, you know, get to that point where their song is in every home? It's just the business just isn't the same anymore. So here you are 40 years later and you're still playing those songs and people want to hear them.
I will tell you this. That's interesting. I'm sure you hopefully have both seen the show. I think one of the ways now is through putting it in TV shows where like that show Peacemaker, which is with John Cena, has shoved 80s rock down people's throats to where, like a band that I used to love called Wigwam, they got they got dropped. Yeah. And then that Peacemaker got them so popular, they got picked up again to be signed to go on a tour because that song got in everyone's home. Everyone was singing the intro to Peacemaker and no one even knew who it was. Crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Billy and I are still a product of the 70s. Those are the records that we, you know, although, you know, in 1977, all these bands out of London kind of made their own thing out of it, which is called punk rock, which, you know, call it whatever you will. For me, the New York Dolls were punk rock and the MC5 were punk rock. But we grew up in that era of when you got a Beatles record, it was or Stones record, or a Led Zeppelin record, Deep Purple. It was an event, and you shared the music. You called up your friends and said, "I got the import version. Come on over." Yeah. Five guys got in a room, smoked a bit of grass, and deciphered what the song was about or what, you know. And all my guitar playing buddies were all, you know, rushing home to figure out, you know, the Stairway to Heaven. Who was going to get it right the first? I got it. Nah, you ain't got it right. That's not the way Page plays it, you know.
Yeah. Even the art of reading liner notes, which was such a great thing to decipher, like every little nuance, it doesn't exist anymore. It's a crazy thing.
Yeah, but we still think in those terms, and that's why when we make a record, we don't want all the songs to sound the same. Rebel Yell goes from, you know, rockers to ballads, because that's the way records used to be. You didn't formulate the record should take you on a journey, and we're still old school that way. We still think that way.
Yeah, I have to ask you an odd question that I don't even know if you could answer this question, but you won a Grammy for the Top Gun anthem, which was on the Top Gun soundtrack. It's very public right now that there is a part two coming out, or whatever you want to call it. Tom Cruise is going to be in it, a second episode of Top Gun. Are they going to use that song?
Called a sequel, Ralph.
A sequel is the right word, yes. But it's, is there going to be that song in the sequel?
I believe the theme, you know, I've given them my blessings to, the last thing I wanted to do was re-record it because, you know, it is what it is and it is iconic and the performance, you know, we won a Grammy for the performance And Hal Faltermeyer, who's the composer, is working on the sequel. And had a conversation with him. I said, use the, you know, take the multi-tracks, use whatever you want. I'm in the dark as much as anybody as far as what the soundtrack will be. I know Hans Zimmer is involved in it as well. So I'll either be...
So if you had a gamble, you would say at least you think an element of it's going to be there.
I've given my okay for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, that's
yeah.
pretty fucking cool. I think that's yeah. great. So now, a couple of things. One, last, I think it was 2 years ago, I don't know what year it was, that the Roadside EP came out, but you're on tour. There's some dates in April that got launched. You're doing the Roadside tour with Billy Idol. The Roadside EP was produced by Butch Walker.
Right.
Who is just, to me, it's so interesting because he is such an underrated dude. You know, I used to love South Gang, which was his first, and then he was in The Marvelous Three.
Right.
And he produced so many great hits.
Yeah.
It's amazing that not enough people realize what an epic producer that dude is. How did that relationship come about?
I had heard there's a song, you know, I was aware of some of his production, and I thought, wow, this guy's really a rocker at heart, but his records are state-of-the-art, they're modern, the attention to detail is there. I knew that he had done the Green Day record, but there was a song by Good Charlotte, I believe.
Yeah, he did that. He did also, like, I think he did Pink. He did so many fucking people, but I'm sorry, continue.
So that song, I think it was called Light 'Em Up or something, and I heard it, and I went, that guy could produce Billy Idol, because it was the first perfect amalgam of rock, like, I don't know, it seemed to be the same concept as what we had always tried to do, but in a new way. And I just reached out to him on Instagram and said, hey, man, you do a hell of a job on a Billy Idol record. And he wrote me back. He said, man, I owned a Steve Stevens model guitar in the 80s.
Oh, shit, that's so cool.
So I said, well, now you have to do the record, you guy. You know.
If you never heard it, his album, I think it's the second or third Marvelous 3 record called Ready, Sex, Go, is one of the best, like, poppy rock records I've ever heard. It's just
a
brilliant
record.
The dude
is so talented. He's so talented. And the fact is, you know, he plays every instrument. He engineers, and at that time, he had a studio in Santa Monica. And just when COVID hit, we had already had plans to work with him. And I said, well, we don't need to, you know, if we quarantine the three of us and go in the studio, just the three of us, we can continue this plan. And that's exactly what we did. And he was, you know, he was the third member of the band. He was the only other member of the band at that time. And man, he's a guitar player, and he and I just went, I love collaborating with other musicians, and especially guys that come from the same, you know, same heart. And we really hit it off really well.
Will he be working on the follow up as well?
Right now, no. We have recorded about. There's one song that he did work with us on, but we have another EP coming out at some point this year, and we've worked with some of the people that actually Butch recommended to us, Tommy English and Joe Janik, who are young songwriter producer guys that also, you know, man, they know more about those classic rock records than even Billy and I, because we don't remember. A lot of that stuff was spur of the moment or sperm of the moment.
You know.
But they'll ask us, hey, on the second verse, there's a sound. Well, I have no idea what that is, you know.
All right, before we go any further, one of my favorite sponsors, because they are just fucking cool dudes, and they sponsor across the board, not just the SDR show, but I think Skankfest and some online content for us. We're talking about Yo Kratom, YoKratom.com, and I always say, you want to support the sponsors that are supporting us. And maybe you've noticed gas prices going up, meat prices going up, rent going up. Oh, you know, one thing that ain't going up, it's the cost of a kilo at YoKratom.com. It's just $60 for a kilo of any one of the high quality curated kratoms on YoKratom.com. Maybe you want a blend that is exclusive to YoKratom.com, or maybe you want one specific strain that you know just hits you just right. They're all there at YoKratom.com. And they haven't been sitting around at like a gas station or a 7-Eleven or one of these places that you don't even know how fucking long they've been there. Why deal with that? Get high quality, get wholesale prices, and get it shipped direct to you, and you'll know it's always $60 for that kilo at YoKratom.com. And you get that gushy feeling inside because you know you're helping the sponsors
that help out the Gas Digital Network and the SDR show. No one in 2022 should go without their Kratom. So head over to yourkratom.com and get yourself that $60 kilo. All right, let's get back into it.
Hey, so Steve, I was talking to another iconic New York guitar player who also lived through the MTV era, Vernon Reed, on my show.
Yeah.
And I was asking his opinion, and I'd like to get yours about, again, because we love that these new rock bands that come up. But, you know, a lot of kids these days, when they want to learn guitar, they go on YouTube, or now, you know, you've had this this lighted up fretboard concept that's been changing hands. Samsung is doing it now. You know, for me, I'm old school. It's like, you I don't know if you get to feel that way. I mean, how do you feel about kids kind of learning through YouTube and these other ways?
You know, that's great. And I did the same thing. The only difference, you know, I sat in my room as a kid for 8 hours sitting with that damn thing to learn it and putting a needle on to learn the music. They have more facilities available to them. They're still doing that, although they're transmitting it to the world on YouTube. But there's the other side of it, which was when I was 17 years old. I don't advocate this for everybody, but I dropped out of high school. I joined a band, and I started playing those cover, you know, in a cover band, playing the same circuit as Twisted Sister and all that. And that was my education, getting in front of people. And as a guitar player, it's not, you know, people will appreciate blah, 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 all this kind of stuff. But you got to give them something they remember and a melody. It's important to have melody. It's important to have the technical dexterity, but you have to make people feel something emotionally. All my favorite guitar players sometimes are not the most technical guys. So there's the other side of it. I hope they understand that that's, you know, just being great in your bedroom is only the beginning.
Yeah, I've been telling women that for years. I'm great in the bedroom. That's better, but
only the beginning.
So obviously, I said at the top of the show, you had flamenco influences in your life, your whole life. Even for years, Billy Idol's song "Don't Need a Gun," you've been doing like flamenco vibe, and you had a flamenco record back in '99. But now you're doing this Randy Rhoads tribute to flamenco style. Can you get into how this came about?
Well, thanks to Tom Morello, he had petitioned to have Randy recognized in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I received an email from a woman named Janet Robin, and she went on to, I didn't know who she was at the time, went on to explain that she was one of Randy's longest standing pupils. Mm-hmm. He taught her at his mom's music school. And to coincide with Randy's induction, they were doing Crazy Train, but with Spanish guitar. And because the last thing I would have wanted to do is replicate what Randy had done. But I knew enough about Randy to know that, A, he studied classical guitar even while he was on the road with Ozzy. He'd seek out teachers and to further, you know, his classical studies. And I thought, well, maybe this is something that Randy would have appreciated, because he, first and foremost, he's a composer, you know. Those guitar parts weren't just pulled out of his butt. They were methodically thought of and composed, and they're like, you know, when you get to a Randy Rhoads solo, it's like another song is happening. It's, you know, brilliant. So I thought conceptually it'd be great. They sent me the backing track, and I said, yeah, I'd love to be involved in it.
And when is the full album coming out? I heard your single, but I haven't heard, like, what else is happening there.
There's no album, as far as I don't know if she's involved in doing a record or something, but it's just a one-off track to coincide.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, that's wild. I did not realize that. That's pretty impressive. What I loved, and I'm not going to even try and pronounce his name, but one of the tracks you worked on last year, the singer of 69 Eyes, you did a White Rabbit Yerky cover. Yes. I don't know how to say it again. How do you pronounce it?
Yerky 69.
Yerky. Yeah. That cover is fucking awesome. I've always loved that song. There was, speaking full circle here, there was a dance remix that I used to play in strip clubs all the time. So rock songs having dance remixes. But that's just a great cover. I love it.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, my buddies over at Cleopatra Records every now and again will hit me up and say, hey, well, you know, I mean, they know that I'll work on anything that's outside of my comfort zone. You know, last thing I want to do is, you know, if I get something that's like, hey, we want something like Rebel Yell, I'm out. You know, I've done that, and that's special to what I do with Billy Idol, and I value that with Billy. But if I get called to do something really outside, you know, I've worked with Juno Reactor, who's electronic music group, and you know, I've worked with musicians in Spain and France, and you know, just expand, because I want to learn too, man. You know, I want to absorb stuff that I don't know about. So that was one of those things. Yeah, cool. You know,
are you still working with the Kings of Chaos too, or you're not doing that?
Yeah, we do. You know, we did the last show we did was with, you know, it's a revolving cast of characters. Matt Sorum usually puts it together. And the last time we did one was with Idol and Alice Cooper. I got to play four songs with Alice. Who,
that's great.
You know, I'm still that kid that put on, you know, Killer and, you know, and School's Out. And you know, when I'm up there, you know, or at soundcheck and I look over and I'm playing the song with the guy, yeah, I get goosebumps. I never want to lose that. You know, I never want to be the guy who's like, yeah, you know, yeah, it's me and Alice. You know, I still want to be turned on by that stuff.
When you played, do you have any stories from the time when you played with Vince Neil, that Exposed tour? Was a crazy time for him, I'm sure. Did you go on the road with him, or you just worked on the record?
Yeah, we actually supported Van Halen for 6 weeks, and that tour was already booked. That was one of the enticing things for me about doing the record with Vince. And Ron Nevison was the producer who had done all these, you know, all those great Heart records, and also did Quadrophenia. So, you know, is, you know, up and doing the album and doing the tour with Vince with Van Halen was amazing, fantastic time. But we were almost like in a bubble because all of this grunge stuff was happening.
Right.
But look, you know, when you're Van Halen are impervious to that, doesn't matter. But once we finished that tour and the you know, we're getting booked into clubs and smaller venues, and you know, it's it was time for me to, that's what kind of gave me the impetus to do my flamenco record, because I didn't really know where rock music was heading. And it was, you know, it was a time for me to kind of get back to my roots, and you know, it's all part of you know, it's all music to me.
It's almost how people during COVID have pivoted to doing different things. You know, I know guitar players who've been doing soundtrack stuff, scoring, you know, video games and things like that, so that you're still being creative, but you're also stretching the muscle. So that was about a 10-year period of stretching the muscle.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had seen the kind of change, the sea change before, after Van Halen kind of hit, and you had all these technical guitar players. Certainly, the California, you know, guys, the shit hot players, the hot rod guitar players, and it was getting faster and faster. And you had Yngwie Malmsteen, and boom, new wave came, because it was, you know, and especially in New York, I saw that happen when bands like, you know, Talking Heads and Blondie and Television, all these bands, it was time to like clear the board of all this kind of technical stuff and break it back down to its roots. And so I'd seen this happen before, and I thought, well, it's healthy. It's healthy anytime a new generation figures out their own music, you know, and it's, you know, it's not for, you know, the old guard, as we were, to stand in anybody's way. But I always knew that liking Billy Idol was always going to be cool, you know. and even for Miley Cyrus, it's cool.
Yeah, that was great. That was the last Super Bowl, not the one that just passed, right? That was the one before. That's pretty well.
Yeah, and he's collaborated with her. We've played with her, and of that generation and she's been really good at exposing her fans to the Joan Jets and, you know, the stuff, the rock stuff that she's trying to appreciate that stuff.
Even so. Metallica.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, man, it's you know, I embrace that stuff.
I imagine her father had something to do with that exposure to that music. I could be wrong, but I have to imagine that's the case.
Funnily enough, about 10 years ago, I played Rebel Yell with her dad.
Oh, well, there you go. I probably did it. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, you did Married to Rock with your wife. How was that experience?
I mean, it was all about my wife. You know, they approached her, and I think, you know, she was still driving back from the audition, and they said, "You got the gig." I mean, she's larger than life. She's much more interesting than me, you know, to be honest. And she deserved to be on TV, and she's no bullshit. I mean, what you see is what you get. She didn't edit anything. She is exactly that person that you see, and I love her to bits. I know that she's been in talks with some other development things to be back on TV doing sort of thing. Because, like I said, it's like living with I Love Lucy.
And also, by the way, congratulations. I saw you and Billy Idol are now action figures.
We are, yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty wild. That's called... Knuckle Bones, I think, is the name of it. What's the story with that?
These are, you know, hand done. They do limited editions, and the imagery. I have a bunch of them. I had a Jimi Hendrix one, a Jimmy Page one, and I saw that, you know, they're real rock fans, because they'll do it. You know, there's a George Lynch one, and they really dig deep. It's not just the upper surface. And I had my manager contact them, and I said, hey, you know, I'd be honored to have a Knucklebones, and maybe we do the images right out of the Rebel Yell video, and that's what they did.
Well, you know, it's funny when people always say there's that special, you know, guitar singer duo that makes bands what they are. But, you know, people mention, you know, Jagger Richards, Axl Slash. You know, you got to put Stevens and Idol up there as well, too. So, absolutely. Well,
thank you. I mean, that was... you know, Billy moved. He had moved from England to New York. Had done 3 records with Generation X, and I think when he was formulating what Billy Idol was going to be, he knew that you need that foil, that guitar player. Man, that goes back to, when I was a kid, I watched the Elvis 68 comeback special with my parents. And my mom and it was a big event. My mom and my aunt were watching, swooning over Elvis. And I saw Scotty Moore sitting there playing brilliant guitar. And I said to my dad, I want to be that guy. You know, that's what I want to do. That's just my personality. I like being the collaborator. But I could never imagine getting behind a mic and doing that.
Let me ask you this. I know it was before your time in the group, so maybe you don't know the answer, but... very famously, he covered Money Money, right? And I believe it's from his version where we all started screaming, get laid, get fucked. And the story that I heard is that it's because he, first time Billy lost his virginity was to the original. So he put that, it's why he covered the song. But is it true that that's where the chorus came from, was from his version? I don't know. I've been trying to find the answer for years.
It is, because when he recorded that version just before I joined. So we've been playing that since the day that I joined. And then we went out on our first, tour, our van tour. And I think it started in colleges, fraternities. It was like a drinking thing. They played Money Money. And we started hearing this chant. We had no idea what the hell they were saying. What are they singing, you know? And we would ask the road manager, I don't know what they're just drunk, you know? No, they're all singing something. What is it, you know? And I think that's where it became.
But from your version, from his version, not from the old version. It was never done on the old version.
People didn't talk like that back then, Ralph.
I understand that. It's just such a weird how it got into the zeitgeist of colleges.
Yeah.
Enough that everyone in America knows to do that. Yeah. I've often tried to look up how the fuck did that start. You know what I mean?
Your guess is as good as mine, but I think it's a fraternity thing.
That's so weird.
That's where I remember it from, college.
Okay.
Drunk in a bar. Like, you didn't go home until you did that part. of the song.
And, you think it's like some dude named Johnny just said, hey, guys, let's do this, and it caught on for fucking 50 years? I don't know. It's just so weird.
Well, thank you, Johnny.
Hey, is it, hey, Steve, is it true Frankie Benali played the drums on that track, you know?
He did. He did.
Yeah, wow.
Did.
Yeah.
Rock and peace, Frankie. We love you.
I only met Frankie once, and I thanked him. I said, you know, man, I know that you played drums on that, and thank you, because he helped put the rock in Billy Idol, because that backing track really does rock, and he helped set the blueprint, you know?
Yeah.
He was also one of the nicest fucking guys on the planet. I got to hang out with him many times over the years, and just such a good dude. We're going to do the first, because we don't have too much time with you left, so we'll hit the first right now.
The first time ever I saw Concert Detroit.
As you know, the name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We've asked this with every single guest on the show since the dawn of time, their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, the first concert you ever went to. I heard it was John Fahey, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, but, you know, I tagged along with my... I tagged along with my brother, and, man, probably 8 or 9 years old. And I know he dropped his pants at some point. John Fahey was, you know, he liked the bottle and wow, whatever went along with that. And I know he dropped his pants, and I went, what's he doing? My brother's like, nothing. Yeah.
I don't know much about it, but I know he's considered one of the best guitarists of all time, but I don't know much about
folk,
him.
You know, that traditional American folk ragtime guitar player. First concert that I ever bought my own ticket to and went to because I wanted to was Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
Oh, wow.
At Madison Square Garden in Quadrophonic. And, that man as a 14-year-old kid, mind-blowing.
And you were obviously already playing in music, so you knew what you wanted to be, and that just further instilled it, right?
It was, first of all, the minute you walked into the garden, the smell of that, you know, the wacky tobacco was just like, wow, yeah. I'm amongst my people. And it was, back then you didn't know anything about bands like that, especially ones that came from England. So it was like, you know, the only communication or the only thing you saw was when you went to the concert. And it was like seeing aliens. These guys were
mystique,
just...
Mystique, Steve.
Exactly.
That's what we're missing these days, mystique.
You can't become famous if you have mystique nowadays. You have to fucking be on Instagram. It's ridiculous.
It was incredible, man. It was really incredible. And then I proceeded to, you know, see other bands, and it was really, you know, camped out and the whole thing, you know, great.
And
great
now the first drug you ever did after pot, unless pot wasn't your first drug.
No, it would have been. Yeah.
So what was the first one you did after weed?
Mushrooms.
How old were you?
18 maybe. And, the band that I was in before Billy Idol, our singer had made friends with, this is a full circle thing, but the drummer from the Grateful Dead, Mickey Hart, actually lived upstairs from me for a brief period of time when I was a kid. His parents had divorced. Mickey came home from the service. But lo and behold, my singer in the band, Ray, meets Mickey's daughter, and the Grateful Dead used to grow their own mushrooms.
Wow.
And he brought a bag home, and he said, I'm dating Mickey Hart's daughter. I go, Mickey Hart? I know Mickey Hart. And mushrooms, yeah.
Did
you pull your pants down like Jeff Fahey?
I didn't, but this is, okay, so we're living in a loft, 30th Street and 8th Avenue, 1979, man. It's gnarly there. And we go into Penn Station to play video games high on mushrooms. And it was like right out of Taxi Driver, man.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And now what about the first time you had sex?
I will say that it was arranged.
Arranged?
Okay.
Was it in India?
So, no. I grew up with some real hippie types in Rockaway, right? My friends were all pretty progressive. So two of my other friends I'm 13, they had reached puberty, and I'm like, well, how will I know? And they go, you'll know. Something's going to happen, you'll know. And I go, yeah, but it's not happening. They arranged for this girl to sleep with me so that I could, yeah.
That's pretty wild. Well, what good friends they are. That's pretty awesome.
Well, she was good. She was the best friend.
And then we ask this a lot to rock stars, all because of Gilby Clark brought it up on the show, which he said the first time he had what he called rock star sex, meaning he knew the girl was sleeping with him because he was him. Do you remember that one?
As I mentioned, I played that cover band scene in Long Island, and this was when you could work five nights a week playing to 2,000 people. I mean, it was an incredible scene until they changed the drinking age. Drinking age was 18 then.
Right.
So if you were in one of those bands and playing three sets a night, and we thought we were big fish in a little pond, but you had groupies on that scene, and in between sets we had our own truck.
I love it so much. That's
so
great.
In between and I knew that wasn't because I had a nice shirt on.
Because it wasn't your charm is what you're saying. I love the idea, which I just to go back and then we'll wrap this up, but on Rebel Yell, when you started your tour, you started in a van. And by the end of the tour, you were superstars. Like, you were playing in much larger venues that no one knew it would get as big as it got. That had to be a wonderful feeling to feel that literal transition happening in real time.
Yeah, we were oblivious to it. And we never, even to this day, Billy and I don't look at chart positions or any of this. We very rarely talk about the music business. We're not, that's for managers to handle and my wife. But so we're out on the road and we start the tour in a van. And, you know, we're not really aware of how this thing is really growing. We, you know, occasionally you get a phone call and say, you know, yeah, you're doing good, boys. You know, and then we got to Los Angeles. We played Santa Monica Civic, and I went, we're doing really good, aren't we? And we ended the tour. We played Nassau Coliseum, and I had my parents come out and my friends, and by then it was obvious that we had reached. You know, we were now an arena rock band.
Well, I'm guilty. I rarely, unfortunately, have to admit this. I've never seen Billy Idol live, so I have to fix that when you guys start doing your tour, because it's crazy that I've not seen you guys live after all these years. It's nuts.
I'm going to come and hunt you down when we're...
Please do, for God's sake. So your Instagram is at Steve Stevens, stevestevensguitar.com. The flamenco version of the Crazy Train is out now on Spotify. You can hear that as well. And the figurines links is available on your website and all on your link tree of everything you could possibly want, a la Steve Stevens, is all there, including tour dates and everything else. Is there anything else we didn't plug on this that we should plug?
Yeah, I'm on Cameo. I do greetings and things like that for people. And, we have T-shirts on my website. You know, all that usual stuff.
And Don Jameson, your plug, sir.
That Jameson Show, every Tuesday at 7 p.m. at compoundmedia.com. And I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Don Jameson Official.
Okay, right, Shannon, your plugs, please, Shannon. Is she gone?
She's gone.
Sorry, I couldn't get it to unmute. you can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting people come on, comedians, musicians, reality TV stars, porn stars, and they tell their stories about their worst date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience that freaked them out that's possibly paranormal.
Well, let me start out by saying I didn't realize how terrible I looked in this camera until Shannon came on, because you really look good tonight, Shannon. I don't like giving you compliments, but you look good there right now.
Thank you.
We try to figure this out. So, Steve, please do not give any indication when I ask this question. Don, I don't know if we did this with you last time, but Shannon's show, as she said, Bad Dates, Fighting, and Ghosts. We try and guess, does the guest believe in ghosts? I am going to say no. Don't answer, Steve. I think it's a no. Don?
Well, I see Steve shaking his head, so I'm going out.
Right after I said don't give any fucking
indication. I'm saying I won't say anything. I'm a firm.
Okay.
Okay, so Don?
Okay, well, so then I will revise my answer. you know, he's down there. He's got all those the little lights and the buttons, and there's got to be a radar system down there. I see in the back, I think. I see some space equipment, maybe a helmet. I'm going to say Steve believes there's and, something out
Shannon,
there.
Shannon, what do you say?
So I feel like with most musicians, because of all of the touring that they've done, that one time or another, they've stayed in a haunted place and something has freaked them out. So I'm going to say yes.
Okay, Steve, what is the answer?
Yeah.
God yeah. damn it. Yeah. I thought you seemed too level-headed, but what are you going to do?
Right, he doesn't do mushrooms anymore.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, the right. mushrooms. Yeah, I should have known about the mushrooms. All right, follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness called The Good Sugar Podcast comes out every Monday. Currently in the top 200 of health on iTunes. And Done with the Founder of Juice Press and I comes out again once again every Monday. We add a song of the week every week to the sdrshow.com/playlist. We'll add the flamenco cover of Crazy Train. Steve Stevens, Don Jameson, Shannon Heyer. Thank you, everyone, for being part of the SDR show. And we'll see you next time. Peace.
You've been listening to the SDR show.